Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by
Dan Binkley from Weird This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here along with
greetings, felicitations, and salutations. CW is here, and what's on your mind is on our mind.
That's true, because we're reading minds.
Well, yeah, we're hanging around with some mentalists tonight.
Well,
mentalists.
Well, you're hanging around with a mental person, that's for sure. That's me.
Yes, we're all mental tonight, so grab a straight jacket and a beverage.
Be mentaled.
Because that's what they call those guys that can that perform and tell what people are thinking. They call them mentalists, I believe.
I always thought they called them scam artists, but I digress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have been called that, oh yes. Yeah. But you never know. You know, I asked you guys yesterday if you had any deja vu or, you know, any kind of experiences of, like, mind reading or anything like that. And I don't think either one of you had recalled any, at least not yesterday. I used to have these, I don't know, little flashes, these little segments of a dream that I would later be reminded of when I went through that exact same action from that. And it was always something brief, like a two-second thing. It was like a deja vu, and then I would remember, oh, I dreamt this. What the hell? And I kept thinking, why can't you pick me numbers? Pick me numbers! But no. Yeah. It was, like I said, it was always something small and, like, not significant, seemingly. In the dream. And then I would forget the dream until later I would actually, it's like, did I precognosize?
You were having subliminal dreams.
But yeah,
two or three frames, and the next thing you know, it goes on to the next thing, and you don't realize it's there, but it's there.
And then you know me. You know I'm kind of skeptical about some things like supernatural things.
Yes, you're very skeptical. You don't discount it all, but you're very skeptical, yes.
Yeah, but like I said, there's some things that have happened in my life where it's like, I don't know, maybe there's something there. I don't know. Need more data.
Does not compute.
Yep. And
I the closest I've ever had to deja vu is if I'm in another city and I'm saying the same morons who put that little island right at an intersection where you have to go around and around to turn must work in different parts of the country.
Oh God, he works here too. No.
Yep.
Oh gosh. I don't know. And then certainly you guys have been maybe around a bunch of friends, and friends tend to think similarly. And have you ever had like group thought stuff? Like everybody comes up with the same idea at once, whether it's to do something fun or anything like that. Any experiences like that, guys?
Kind of, sort of. Of course, pizza is the universal food of choice, so I don't know how accurate that would be.
Well, you know, there has to be something there, or else Pinch Poke Owe Me a Coke would never have come about. Think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's the closest thing I've come to is when, you know, kind of saying something the exact same time that somebody else came up with it.
I don't know.
So that's the closest, you know, what would be our dining options for today?
We've got a show we've never had before called Proudly We Hail, and also an episode of Nightbeat tonight.
Yeah, Nightbeat being one of my favorite. I just love Frank Lovejoy and this series. Plus, the writing is just absolutely phenomenal. I love what they do with the show because of the writing. You know, because cool. Here's a cynical newspaper man, and he is usually in the middle of some kind of heart-wrenching story sometimes. So it's just so well written that it's something I always enjoyed. They did try one episode on television, I think, during a four-star Playhouse, I think it was. They did one Nightbeat on, as it would appear on television, and starring Frank Lovejoy. The only problem I had, I think the radio moved along a little faster than television. Television, they just had more things to, as we were getting used to watching television, to make it different from television. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just video that wasn't necessarily in scenes and panning that wasn't really necessary, but it's what made the difference between radio and television. That did make a better story, but it did make a difference between radio and television.
Interesting. So we have a seasoned, sort of hard-boiled newspaper man, a la Carl Polshak.
I think you could say that. He's not chasing monsters around, except the monsters of people. He, you know, basically the premise is he's on the night beat. He walks around Chicago at night and finds human interest stories to print in the paper. And sometimes by the morning, but usually it takes a few days for the column to come to fruition. So,
a pretty good premise for a radio program. We might as well jump into part one of, let's start with Nightbeat and save the new show for later. That title is intriguing, of Proudly We Hail. It's resonating with me, and I don't know. Maybe I know the story. I don't know.
Maybe you wrote this story in another lifetime, Dale.
I don't know.
Possibly.
But it seems to me I've heard that expression before, the Magnificent Parker. I don't know. We'll find out.
Probably, yes.
But Foist.
But Foist.
Let's get that hard-boiled newspaper guy from Nightbeat. This one's entitled Mentallo, the Mental Marvel.
Episode number 1313 from May 1st of 1950.
Ooh.
Wheaties Big Parade.
Parade of Joes.
The makers of America's favorite whole wheat flakes, Wheaties Breakfast of Champions, invite you to Wheaties Big Parade, a thrilling procession of radio's greatest summer entertainment programs. Yours for the listening on NBC. On stage tonight from Hollywood, the first of 65 exciting half-hour presentations. Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. My stories start in many different ways. This one began with a question and ended when the secret locked in a man's mind brought sudden death.
Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
America's favorite whole wheat flakes. That's an honest description of Wheaties in five well-chosen words. But it really doesn't begin to tell you how Wheaties got to be that way. And if I expect you to pull up a bowl and spoon to a box of Wheaties tomorrow morning, there are at least two reasons I think I ought to mention. First of all, Wheaties taste good. They taste mighty good, either plain with a little milk or cream, or with your favorite fruit sprinkled on top. They're crisp, delicate, flavorful flakes, good right down to the bottom of the bowl. And secondly, good tasting as Wheaties are, they always remember to be good for you, too. I could tell you all the vitamins and minerals Wheaties contain, but why don't I just say Wheaties are 100% whole wheat flakes? That says more than a lot of fancy words. It's really amazing that anything that tastes as good as Wheaties can be so good for you. But it's true. Try Wheaties, America's favorite whole wheat flakes, next time you're up before breakfast.
Tonight I had another story to write. Find it somewhere in the 3,000 square miles of Chicago, among the people who are Chicago. People. Ever get the feeling you'd like to forget that word? Close a mental door, snap a psychic lock, and boom, you're alone? Can't do it, pal, because maybe you're people, too. So tonight I watched them again. I wandered south on Western Avenue, crossed Addison, and there was Riverview Park. I walked around there, watching the people hurry themselves from one thing to another, each one trying to catch up with a couple of hours of fun. And then I saw a sign that read, Mentolo, the marvel of the age, knows everything. Admission, 25 cents. Okay, I'm a sucker for any man who knows everything and freely admits it. You might even know what makes the world tick, like a time bomb. That'd be worth 2 bits of anybody's money. I went in. Mentolo was in the middle of his act.
Battle of Waterloo proper was begun at 11:30 a.m. on June the 17th, 1815. The battle went through 5 distinct phases until the French were routed.
That right, lady?
Well, yes, it is.
It sure is. Now, who's next? Who has the next question? You, sir. You just came in. You seem a little skeptical.
Are you talking to me?
I am, sir. Maybe you'd like to ask Mentolo a question.
Oh, all right. What's the temperature of the sun?
Mentolo, the gentleman thinks he stumped you.
The temperature of the visible surface of the sun is about 6,000 degrees centigrade. The interior temperature is estimated at approximately 20 million degrees centigrade.
Is that correct, sir?
I'll take his word for it.
And you can, sir. Now, who's next? Who?
I got a question.
Very good. Ask it.
Mentolo.
Yes?
What happened? What happened to you on the 15th of last month?
What happened... the 15th...
Yeah, the 15th.
Mentolo.
The 15th. Make him get out of here. Get him away.
That's all for this show. That's all.
Nothing wrong. Nothing wrong.
He's stopped dead.
Here up.
Okay,
everything's all right. Now, there up. There up. There up. Okay. Mentolo. Mentolo, come on. Let's get out of here.
It happened again, Phil. Again.
You want a doctor?
Now, look, Mr. Rice, said everybody clear out.
Yes, I know, but this man collapsed. He looks pretty beat.
I said get out.
Okay.
And make it fast.
Okay.
Real fast.
So I made it real fast, like the man said. But as I walked through the carnival grounds, that bird brain of mine that just won't let me grow old gracefully started working overtime. Why did Mentolo do a nosedive when that question was asked? What happened to him on the 15th of last month? Listen tomorrow at the very same time, and just plain stone will tell you all about it. But then, just as I'd reached the edge of the carnival grounds, a voice pushed its way through my thoughts. It was the man who'd asked the question. I walked over to the shooting gallery and picked up one of the rifles.
I say here you are, mister. Test your eye and your aim.
Why, sure, sure. Thank you.
Well, that was close, pretty close.
I'll try to do better.
Ah, just a little more practice, that's all. A little practice.
Yeah, like everything else.
Uh-huh. Well, that's better.
By the way, what happened to you on the 15th of last month?
I take your shots and beat it.
Why did you ask that question?
Give me the rifle, mister.
I got 5 more shots coming.
Not tonight. Give me it.
I pays my quarter. It takes my shot.
I said hand me the rifle.
Okay, here.
You want to see something? Watch.
Well, with bullets or words, the man's good.
You ain't a Connie man.
No?
No. But you're awful curious.
That's an old family failing and an occupational hazard.
Uh-huh.
Why did you ask Medelo that question? Did you know how it would affect him?
You know, mister, a couple of months back, a guy picks up one of these rifles. He don't know nothing about guns, see? He gets careless and the gun goes off. At him. He's dead. Accident.
You know, pal, you have a strange oblique way of making me feel uncomfortable. I see what you mean.
Uh-huh. Now you're hitting the bullseye. So long, mister.
Okay, twice I got curious, twice I drew blanks. I thought about it some more and then decided to pass it up in favor of the cotton candy. And then I saw Mentolo. He was walking down the midway, but like a man in a trance. There was something about him that screamed, I need help. His little figure seemed odd, incongruous against the laughing, hurrying people. I followed him, wondering. And then he stopped in front of the roller coaster. For a moment he watched it, and then, as if suddenly making up his mind, he headed for the ticket booth. That didn't figure, so I bought a ticket, too, and followed him to the loading platform.
Tickets for the next ride, please. Tickets for the next ride.
Here you are.
Oh, thank you. Tickets for the next ride. Tickets for the next ride, please.
I got in the car directly behind Mentolo. That dazed, bewildered expression was still on his face. His hands gripped the side of the car. He half rose in his seat as though he were going to leave, but he sat down again. And then...
All right. Lock the safety bars. It's 200 feet up. Lock your safety bars.
We started up the long incline toward the top of the 200-foot grade. I kept my eyes on Mentolo. He gripped the safety bar in front of him until his knuckles whitened under the pressure. A couple of kids behind me began to rip me.
Jeez, hi. I'm getting scared.
Hey, mister, you gotta have a girl with you.
Well, I did, but I left her in the funhouse.
Oh, what a square she must be.
Yes.
Hey, if you get scared, mister, hold on to me.
I'll keep that in mind.
Hey, baby, I paid $4 for this. Let us grab his own cookie. hey, watch it. We're going over.
Here we go!
And then it happened. We started down the almost perpendicular drop. Mentolo stood up. Mentolo!
Let me go! Let me go!
Mentolo struggled to his feet, almost dragged me out of my seat. I held him while we hurtled down the long drop and finally hit the bottom. Then Mentolo stopped struggling to get free. He went limp and sagged back into his seat.
Why did you stop me? I've got to kill myself.
Well, he almost did, and me with him. My arms ached from the effort of holding him down. But the ride was finally over. I got him off and away. He let me lead him like a child out of the park and to his cheap hotel room on the north side. I told him who I was and then waited until he spoke.
Why didn't you let me do it?
Well, I'm just an old busybody. How about some coffee?
No, nothing. Just leave me alone, please.
Just a minute, I saw your act tonight. I heard the question that sent you off.
It's always someone different who asks it. Never the same person twice.
Have you ever got hold of the person who asks it?
No. I was afraid to.
What did happen to you on the 15th of last month?
I don't know. Something tells me that I must not remember. I must not!
Your act is legitimate, isn't it?
Legitimate?
Yeah, no fake, you know, no shills to ask questions you're sure to know the answer to.
I have a photographic memory, Mr. Stone. I never forget anything.
Yet you've forgotten one day of your life.
Yes. You don't believe it, do you?
Oh, yes, I do. But why did you try to kill yourself?
Because I know that if I do remember, I wouldn't be able to stand it.
Don't you have any clue at all?
Two things that mean nothing.
Well, maybe they do. What are they?
It's just streamers in the sky and the name Helene.
Streamers in the sky and Helene. Who is Helene?
I don't know anybody by that name. I don't. I tell you, I don't.
All right. Now, take it easy, Mentolo.
Oh, get out and leave me alone. Get out.
Yeah. Get out and leave him alone.
Phil.
Well, my friend, the Barker. Hello.
What are you doing here?
I brought Mentolo home after he tried to kill himself.
What? Mentolo. You all right?
I'm all right, Phil, but I don't want to remember.
Look, Phil, for what it's worth, he's sick. He's got to see a doctor.
No, Phil, get him out of here.
Mister, get out.
But this man is...
Get out and don't come back. Because if you do anything that hurts Mantelow, I'll kill you.
General Mills is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. If someone asked you to describe a bowl of Wheaties topped with fruit and swimming in thick, rich cream, you couldn't do better than to say, breakfast of champions, because that's a fact. A lot of champions
cream,
in the sports
really?
World really go
they
for Wheaties. Milk. They like the way Wheaties taste, and they admire the solid nourishment
cream
Wheaties
in your
water.
Cereal?
Finding a breakfast cereal that's good
Ew.
And good for you is just as much of a bargain to a baseball champion as it is to anyone else. For example, the world's
it's
champion New York Yankees have a sparkling third baseman named Bobby Brown. He eats Wheaties. He's been eating Wheaties for 10 years. He must know what he's talking about when he says this. You
sure.
can put
you
me
have
down
to hang around with
milk,
Whitney Houston.
Fruit, and Wheaties almost any day of the year. Those whole wheat flakes taste swell and hand you lots of good nourishment, too. I'd recommend Wheaties to anyone, anytime.
Oh.
Well, I
oh
don't
my
suppose
God.
You'll be fielding any hot
Wheaties.
Grounders along the third baseline anytime soon, but before you know
oh,
it,
well,
you'll
you
be eating
me.
Breakfast again. And we feel you're entitled to champion nourishment just
like
as
Gilligan's
much as any
Island.
Player
How
in
many
the New
years
York Yankee
coconut
lineup.
And pineapple
Have yourself
you
a bowl of Wheaties, Ew. Won't you? Wheaties, breakfast of champions.
Okay, it's only a three-hour tour.
Three-hour tour, yeah. They just made sure they had enough, and the Howells made sure they had enough clothes, and Ginger had enough costumes. And the
oh,
only
yeah,
one who traveled
Howell,
light was
oh,
Marianne Gilligan and the skipper and the professor.
Yeah.
They never changed.
Don't forget, Mrs. Howell, yes, and Mrs. Howell had at least a couple of trunks worth of jewelry, so there's that.
There's that, too, yep. Nah, well, what are you going to do? Damn Howells.
But I'm liking this. yes, the 1% Howells.
Really? A stalk of celery with a chunk of lard. Healthy snack?
By the time they got...
I think, yeah. I don't know about that.
Yum, yum.
I like it. I like it. I have to attain a certain level of toxicity to operate at peak performance.
Oh, okay.
That's why I live the way I live, kids.
And never compromise. Never compromise.
Oh dear, I'm reaching for my organic herbal green tea tonic right now to counteract that.
green tea's good for you. Never touch the stuff.
I know, me either. It's like vegetables, all the green stuff.
Now, vegetables
yeah.
I
Stay
like.
Away.
Vegetables I
Stay
like.
Stay away. Stay away.
Especially when I've grown them myself.
Yeah. That's why I'm not afraid of treefid. If I ever see a treefid, I'll just come after it with a bottle of ranch, watch it run away from me. Come here, you'll be tasty, steamed, and covered in ranch. Come back.
Triffids are great.
Mm-hmm.
When sautéed. Let's wrap up. The mental midget. The mental midget.
I don't have anything for that. I really don't. I don't. But I'll take the ranch dressing.
There you go. Mantelo, the mental midget. I mean Marvel from Night Beat.
And now back to Night Beat and Randy Stone.
Like I said before, sometimes you'd like to seal off the rest of the world and forget it. Let 1,000 people die in a flood, we click our tongues and say, how terrible. That's as far as it goes. But let one kid scratch himself on a nail and 87 people come running with the iodine. The human reality of what happens to a lot of people at once is too big for us. But what happens to one individual is something each of us can get hold of. I don't know, maybe that's what sent me to a friend of mine, a psychiatrist whom I dragged out of bed.
But, Randy, what concern is mental of yours?
Oh, I don't know, Ken. Why'd you become a psychiatrist?
Well, I see what you mean.
Okay, you see what I mean. Now, what gives with mental though?
Self-protection. His mind is protecting him. Whatever happened on the 15th of last month is suppressed. The memory is horrible enough to force a complete blackout.
Yeah, but he remembers two things, Ken. Streamers in the sky and the name Helena. What do the streamers mean?
Almost anything. This guy's symbol for something else.
Yeah, he tried to kill himself tonight. Will he try it again?
It's likely.
Well, what'll set him off again?
Hard telling. Question, object, anything. Was Mentolo upset when you left him?
Upset? He was practically hysterical.
I'd better go with you.
Oh, you're worried too, huh?
I'd feel better if I saw him. Let's go.
Here's the room. It's right here, 612.
Randy, try the door.
Open.
You know where the light is?
I think I saw a switch by the door.
Randy!
Mentolo.
Don't try to unfasten that buckle. Cut the belt.
Lift him. Hurry.
All right. Cut that belt. Hurry up, Randy.
Is he alive?
I think so. All right.
Easy, Kent. There.
Pulse is still strong. He couldn't have been hanging more than a few seconds before we came in.
Poor little devil, Ken.
Look, Randy.
What?
There's something clutched in his hand.
But, why, yes, that's a key. That's an old-fashioned house key. Now, why?
I don't know.
Well, what's your guess?
It's hard telling, Randy, but I do know this. He's no longer responsible for his actions.
But then the next time he tries anything like this, maybe nobody will be around to stop it. Ken, is there anything that we can do? Is there anything you can do?
It's up to him, Randy, but let's get him to my office. We'll see what we can do there.
Feeling better, Mentolo?
Yes, thank you.
You know where you are?
No. Where's Phil?
Oh, you're Barker? I don't know. Now listen to me, Mentolo. You tried to hang yourself. Do you remember that?
Yes. After Phil left, I felt so hopeless.
You had this in your hand, this key. Look at it.
I found it in my pocket, and then I knew I had to kill myself.
Is it your key? Do you remember what it's for?
No.
He won't remember that, Randy.
Oh.
Who are you?
He's a friend of mine, and he's a doctor, Mentolo.
Well, I don't want any...
Now, look, twice tonight you tried to kill yourself. Once is enough to call in the police.
No.
Oh, don't worry. That's not what we want to do. I want to help you, and the doctor wants to help you. Please believe that.
No one can help me because I can't remember, and I must not remember.
The police will ask questions when they learn you tried to kill yourself.
But it's no business of theirs or yours. Why don't you leave me alone? Why do you care?
Oh, that's the same old question asked the same old way, and this time I've run out of answers. Make up one of your own. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I believe you do want to help.
Yes, we do. Now, look. There'll be no need to call in the police if you'll let us help you. You're sick. Do you know that? You're sick.
Let us help you.
All right.
Good. Now, you trust Mr. Stone, don't you?
Yes, I do.
All right. You're going to sleep. When you feel this hypodermic needle, start counting backward from 100. Just a little sting, then start counting backward from 100. Now,
Mr. Stone. Mr. Stone.
What, Mentolo?
You stay near.
Oh, yes, I'll stay.
Start counting. 99, 98, 95, 90.
He
knows your voice, Randy. He trusts you.
You ask the question.
Me, is it all right?
Yes.
Mantelow, can you hear me?
Yes.
It's the 15th of last month.
The 15th of last month. Streamers in the sky.
What streamers? What are they? Where are they?
The Aurora Borealis.
The Northern Lights?
Yes. Yes. Aurora. I went to Aurora.
Aurora, Illinois?
Yes. I was there.
Now, you're in Aurora. Where did you go there?
The house. Yes, I've got to open the door. The key...
Here. Here's the key.
Unlock the door. She's going to be here. Helene.
Who is Helene?
I love her. She loves me. There's the room. The room?
All right. All right, now you're in the room. What did you do?
I waited. Waited for her. And she came in. And then... I... Helene! Helene!
Mantelow.
Oh, Helene! Helene!
Ken, is he all right?
Yes.
We still don't know what happened.
There's one way to find out, Randy.
What, find the house in Aurora and take him there?
That's it. What we've done here is bring him to recall that far.
You see?
Now it's a question of bringing back the whole thing, bit by bit.
Ken didn't go along. Mantelow didn't want him to. It wasn't a long drive in miles. I watched Mantelow when I could. His face was contorted in an agony of effort as we drove through Aurora slowly, looking for one street, one house. Then...
That house.
But it's all boarded up. Are you sure, Mantelow?
It's that house.
All right. The house set back from the street. The only light came from a street lamp half a block away. Mantelow walked slowly ahead of me. Up the walk toward the porch, then up the porch stairs. Open the door.
Locked. It was locked that day, too.
Well, unlock it. You've got the key.
Yes, yes, the key.
Where's the light switch?
No light.
All right. We'll use the flashlight. Now, go ahead, Mantelow. Go ahead. But there's no furniture here, Mantelow. This house is vacant.
Well, this is her house. I know. There were three of us here. Three. And this is the room.
Go on. Mantelow, think. Well, you've got to think. It's the only way you'll remember what happened. The only way you'll find out what's torturing you.
She's here. She came to me in this room.
Helene came to you here?
Because she loved me.
Where is she now?
Her clothes. In this closet.
Mantelow walked to the closet, opened it. A row of dresses hung there. A faint odor of perfume drifted through the room. For a moment, Mantelow stood there. And he started toward a door. Mantelow, where are you going?
I know. The basement.
Wait for me.
Down there.
There's no one here, Mantelow. No one at all. The basement's empty.
Not empty. She... Under the earth where I put her. Under the earth.
Get it out. Come on, get a hold of yourself. What are you talking about?
I killed her. She came to me because we loved each other. I was holding her in my arms when I killed her.
Now she's down here. Under our feet. I killed her.
Who was she?
I killed her.
You're satisfied now? You're satisfied?
Bill.
What are you doing here?
You had to stick your nose in. You had to make him tell, didn't you?
Mentolo, are you sure? Are you sure?
Yeah, he's sure. And so am I, because I helped him put her here. He'd never known if you didn't make him remember.
Who was Helene?
You're never going to know.
Helene.
You had to go and make him remember. It was all over. Nobody would have known because we traveled with the yak.
Yes, but somebody did know. Because somebody asked him tonight what happened on the 15th. Somebody always asked that question. Why? And who was Helene?
Helene? Helene was his wife.
What?
He was jealous because she never loved him. She loved me.
Then how could you have killed her, Mentolo? Listen to me. You only think you killed her. Because if she hadn't come here, she wouldn't have been killed. You blamed yourself. That's what it was. And then you forgot. The shock made you forget.
Don't listen to her, Mentolo. Don't listen.
I remember now. I remember. You killed her. Made me believe.
But you're not going to tell anybody else about it. Both of you are going to stay here.
I'm not afraid anymore, Phil. Because I know now I didn't kill her. You did, Phil.
Mentolo went toward Phil. He let a gun pointed at him. I jumped back, turned off the flashlight. For a moment, there wasn't a sound. And then...
Mentolo. Where are you? Mentolo.
Wait, Mentolo. Don't move. You hear me? Don't move.
Mentolo. Stone! Mentolo!
Helene is here, Phil. Down here.
Shut up!
Mentolo.
I'm all right.
Good. Phil. What's it going to be now?
Get me out of here! Away from her! Philip! Get me out of here!
Well, it's almost dawn now. I can go home to my little trundle bed and sleep the day away. Yo-ho-ho, the reporter's life for me, oh sure. But anyhow, I got my story. Two men, one whose feelings of guilt forced him to believe he'd killed the woman he loved, and another man whose feelings of guilt made him a gibbering coward. But where's the moral? That someone always pays for a crime? Sure, but... who is guilty? Maybe we should say, what is guilty? What's in that space above our eyes that makes us act the way we do? That makes us people? To louse up Shakespeare, there are more things in the darkness of the mind than are dreamed of in your philosophy, Mr. Stone. Oh, you can call me Randy, pal. Just call me Randy. Copy, boy.
Night Beat, first on the Wheaties Big Parade, stars Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. Here again is Frank Lovejoy.
Stepping out of the role of Randy Stone, I'd like to make a very important request of you and your family. Pick up the May issue of Reader's Digest and turn to page 73 and read the short article called, What Do You Eat for Breakfast? I was amazed to learn from this article how important a good breakfast is to the health and welfare of every one of us. And that means the health and welfare of our nation. To all the men who sell Wheaties, you, the sales force of more than 700 enterprising men of General Mills, and you, the hundreds of thousands of grocers who must meet the exacting needs of the American homemaker, to all of you, I want to say that I'm mighty proud to be back on your team again. We have a big job to do. Together, we can help more families to help themselves by eating a good, substantial breakfast, one built around Wheaties, the breakfast of champions. As we do this, we can take pride in the fact that we are making a real contribution to the health and welfare of our nation.
And pancakes.
Good night, and thank you.
A lot of syrup.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's script was written by Russell Hughes with music by Frank Worth. The part of Mentolo was played by Ben Wright. Listen next week at this same time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. And now, on Wednesday night, listen to Brian Donlevy in Dangerous Assignment on the Wheaties Big Parade. Night Beat came to you from Hollywood. Stay tuned for a special all-star broadcast on NBC.
I feel like going over to my store and saluting a box of Wheaties now.
Yep. Going to salute a box of Wheaties.
Salute a box of Wheaties, yes.
Perhaps a moral to be learned here or no?
I don't have one for this one. It just I kind of have some ideas, but I don't have a good moral. So,
all right, then we got to have this.
Make me a size of Jackson food.
There we go.
That works.
That does it. Nicely done. Well done.
One of the best lines in movie history.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
But he was aimed in general.
What's that now? The what? Hello? Did I get cut off?
No, you're here.
Okay. It happens. Thanks, Blog Talk. But it didn't happen this time.
Nah, we're stuck with you. I think we lost CW is what we lost.
CW get caught off. Oh, I see.
I'm here. I'm here.
You're back. Wonderful.
We missed what you had said before you disappeared.
Oh, yes. I say he was aiming low instead of make me a sergeant, make me a four-star general and charge it to me.
In charge of the booze. Yeah.
In charge of the booze. Make me a four-star general in charge of the booze.
Why not? Shoot for the works.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's pretty weird that Bendis couldn't remember that, you know? Bendis couldn't remember that he didn't murder somebody, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, he didn't remember that he did murder her. Then when he did remember that he murdered her, he remembered he didn't murder her. Maybe that's the moral of the story. I don't know.
It is weird because I happen to remember every single time I didn't murder someone.
You didn't murder someone. Yeah.
I remember every single time that I didn't murder someone. Yes.
Yeah.
There we are. We're all like-minded. I remember in precise detail every single individual that I probably wanted to murder and have yet to get around to doing that.
Well,
Didn't get around to it. I like that. Yeah.
Glad for that because
I do remember every bottle of Blatz I murdered. I do remember that.
Yeah. I just don't want you calling from prison, you know? We don't want to hear you calling from prison. Well, none of that murder talk.
Yeah, this murder talk is killing me. I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
We call it sleep assistance. Permanent sleep assistance is what we call it now. The new gentler version of murder. So proudly we hail. Dave, tell us about this. We've never had this program on Erie House.
We have. It was the Armed Forces here. Proudly we hail was a public service show for the Army and Air Force that aired first on CBS in 1941 for 4 months. Then the show returned to the airwaves from 1946 through 1957 in at least two other forms and on various radio stations. So it became... You know, CBS aired it at first, but then it kind of became a public service program that was sent out and was, again, by the Army and Air Force, which is, weird. Well, I guess the Air Force was at one point part of the Army before it broke off
it was.
Its own division.
Yes, it was the Army Air Corps, which my father was in World War II.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, oh, they, so hang on a sec now. Once upon a time, there was not an Air Force, but then there was an Air Force with the Army, and then there was an Air Force, but the Army still has an Air Force, the Navy has an Air Force, the Marines have an Air Force, and also the Coast Guard has an Air Force, and the postal workers, well, the United States Postal Service, they have their own planes, too. So everybody's got their own Air Force, I take it now.
I don't.
Correct?
I don't.
I don't
neither.
I would like to have an Air Force.
I'm not happy. I'm not happy with that.
I'm not happy now knowing that I should be having it in my own Air Force. The Erie House Air Force.
Yeah, no kidding.
We could all share
it. Erie House Air Force. Yeah.
Think how we'd cut the travel time.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know. I don't think we could afford a plane, Dale. It's really expensive. The upkeep is more expensive than buying a plane.
It should be a government write-off.
We've got to think that about, you know.
I guess so. Welcome
can't we,
to Erie
can't
House
we rate it
Air.
Off?
Please? Yeah. Air. Welcome to Erie House Air. Please automatically assume your crash position because we are probably going to crash.
I don't know. Don't we do enough on Erie House to foul up the air without putting a plane in there?
Yeah. The crash position. Put your head between. Never mind.
Oh my goodness. Oh.
Mwah.
Oh, the thoughts that are going through the mind now. The mind boggles.
Say goodbye, kids. Ew. But,
oh dear.
Yeah.
Take it easy. This is going on Wi-Fi. This is going through the air as well as the radio waves, cable waves, dial-up waves, and any other waves.
And Wi-Fi waves. Yeah, you name it. Is there
microwaves and
microwaves, short wave, long wave,
permanent wave,
permanent wave.
Anyway, I didn't sign up for a permanent wave. I'm sorry. I didn't.
Yeah. Hold still. We're taking care of this right now. Take a stooge-like approach.
We got a whole lot of radio. Yeah.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, so we digress.
Let's get on to Proudly We Hail. It's an interesting title. I don't know why it sounds familiar to me. The Magnificent Parker.
And it comes to us from November 26th of 1950.
Fair enough.
Proudly we hail.
We're doing it proudly, at least, you know.
Proudly we goat.
And now another Proudly We Hail, one of radio's outstanding dramatic half hours, starring Lee Tracy. And presented, transcribed by your Army and your Air Force. From Radio City, New York, here is your star and host on Proudly We Hail, the distinguished Broadway stage, screen, and radio star, Lee Tracy.
Thank you, Kenneth Banghart, and hello, everyone. Welcome again to Proudly We Hail. I'm really in my element for our story today.
What do you mean by that, Lee?
Well, this is really a story of good old-fashioned show business, Ken. A story about what we call in show business an old carny hand. A real carnival drifter.
Sounds like a real story.
I'm sure our audience will enjoy it, Ken. We'll begin in just a moment after your important message.
My important message, Lee, is that the United States Army needs volunteers now. Young men and women are wanted for all types of jobs. So help keep America strong by enlisting for active duty right away. Get all the details at your nearest Army and Air Force recruiting station today. And now, Lee, how about that story? What's it called?
The Magnificent Parker, Ken. The Magnificent Parker.
With our star, Lee Tracy, in the title role, your Army and your Air Force present the Proudly We Hail production of The Magnificent Parker.
Friends, one and all, may I have your indulgence for just a moment. I take pleasure in presenting, for your combined amusement and edification, the one and only, the magnificent Parker, a medalist extraordinary, a mind reader, and purveyor of fun, magic, and mystery. And now I stand before you, ready to reveal the secrets which lodge in the dark recesses of the subconscious. And the cost? Ha-ha! Friends, the compensation is slight, for I desire neither the aged vintage of our Magnat cellars of Paris, France, nor do I crave the nectar of the Benedictine monks. No, friends, simple, small, cold, insignificant, 10-cent beer will suffice beautifully.
Beat it, Harry. Nobody's interested.
Ha ha! The secret powers of the Sir Balu are entrusted to only a chosen few, my friends. But hold, there in the corner booth, I see a young man. He sits alone, dissatisfied, dejected. I see a world of print, of ink, and foolscap revolving about his head, a halo-like. Of course, he's a newspaper man, a man who's given everything to his employers and his craft, and who has now been cast aside like a rubbish, unjustly. Am I right, my friend?
Yeah, you're right.
Ha-ha! Draw one, if you please, innkeeper.
That right, mister?
Yeah, bring him a beer. How did you know I was a newspaper man and that I was canned?
My friend, every person in the world carries the imprint of his profession externally. A practice eye plus a bit of luck is all that it takes. Now your Alpha Delta signet ring told me you were a journalist. And the empty glasses set up before you told me you'd either been fired or your woman had taken a powder. Now, being that you don't strike me as the type of guy to be bowled over by a dame, I took a stab at the former, and luckily, I was right.
Well, that's simple enough. You make it sound easy. A guy with your nimble mind, how did you ever end up like this?
Aha! You ask. You ask. And well, you may. But the answer would necessitate the telling of my life story. And that would take time. Precious time.
That's something I have plenty of. Unload.
Very well, Al. It's your party. I don't suppose you've ever heard of the Magnificent Parkers, huh? No, I don't suppose. We were a mentalist act. Nothing shoddy like carnies. We played the big time. We were tops in the line. We did nothing but vaudeville and private engagements. Dory, my wife, was my partner. Believe me, we were a sensation. Life was good to us in those days. The act was a hit. We had money coming in, and we loved each other. There was just one thing we lacked. And then, one day, even that prayer was answered. I'll never forget how I rushed to the hospital and that long, lonely wait in the corridor.
Mr. Parker, Dr. Harris will see you in his office.
Yeah, is Dory all right?
Dr. Harris will see you, Mr. Parker.
How's my wife, Doctor? When can I see her?
Mr. Parker, your wife gave birth to a beautiful baby girl.
But, Dory, can I go to her now?
I'm afraid, Mr. Parker, that you can't.
Oh. Oh, no. No. Oh. Dory was gone. And I blamed the kid for it. I drew all the savings we had out of the bank, and I carried my daughter straight from the hospital to an orphan's home up in the country. I'll never forget that train trip with the baby bundled up in my arms and the hood pulled down over her face I didn't dare to lift up the hood and take a peek at that face. I guess I was afraid I'd see Dory there staring up at me. Or, well, or something. I brought her into the reception room of the orphan home. Hall was deserted. Somewhere off, I could hear the melancholy strains of an organ. I placed her on the table and pinned the envelope with the name Catherine. That was Dory's middle name, containing the cash on her bunting, and quietly slipped out. 8 years melted away like ice in a furnace.
So that's the day.
Just the beginning, pal. Just the beginning.
A couple more over here, Mac. Coming up.
Well, I found myself a head talker in a cheap tent show down south. Nickel nurser by the name of O'Hara ran the show. He was only one step ahead of the law and two behind his creditors. Mostly the pack of us works strictly for laughs. I left the mentalist routine back with Dory, and I wouldn't have anything to do with it. I made myself content with my life as a grifter. But I never could quite forget that little bundle I'd left in the orphan's home. I started feeling something in the back of my mind, a plan that maybe the kid and I could be reunited and I could do something big for her. It was these kind of dreams I was having the night it all began. Yeah. The beginning of the end for me. Hey ho, hey hi. Hurry over. Now everything is free, everything you see. Now gather in a little closer, gents, and keep that midway clear. Now first, I want to call to your attention the amazing, fantastic, exotic attractions are now due to start within the confines of the 5-in-1 tent directly behind me. Hurry.
Hey,
go away, Billy. Go away, will you? Not during my pitch.
Hey, somebody here to see you, Harry. He's an old geezer dressed to kill. Must be worth $1 million.
What's he want with me?
I don't know. You better go find out. He's waiting outside your car.
Okay, Billy. Here. Take over, will you?
Sure thing.
Hurry, ladies and gentlemen. The giant finally went to the top. As I approached my flop, I saw the guy standing outside my door. Billy was right. The old boy was town and country. The McCoy.
Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Harry Barker?
Yep, that's me.
I wonder if there's any place where we might talk undisturbed.
Why, sure. Won't you step into my library? He was a heavy, small man in his early 60s, self-assured, perfectly poised, sat down on the edge of my cot, remained silent. Well, what can I do for you, Mr. Now?
Bolton. Henry Bolton.
Oh, well, I'm pleased to meet you, I'm sure.
There are people with special mind-reading powers. And you, Parker, are one of those people.
Well, now, perhaps you're right.
I know I'm right. I've spent a great deal of money tracing you down to this backwater, and I'm prepared to spend a good deal more to secure your services.
Now, how much do you figure is a good deal more?
I'm ready, Mr. Parker, to pay you $20,000 for 5 minutes of your great gift.
$20,000? Yeah, well, now, what am I expected to do?
You are to read a mind for me.
Read a mind? Oh, no!
You find my proposition amusing?
Look here, Bolton. What if I were to tell you that it was all a gag? I have no special gifts. That it's all a routine, a hype.
I repeat, Mr. Parker, I've spent a great deal of money to find you because I believe you are the only man who can help me.
I suppose I should have given him the old heave-ho. There were a couple of roustabouts around. It would have been simple. But I kept thinking of that $20,000 bucks. With a wad like that in the old sock, my little girl and I could really get together. Well, it's all in the past. Nothing I can do about it now. Anyway, 2 hours later found me and Bolton winging our way to the city lights, and me with my mouth open listening to one of the craziest deals I'd ever heard.
Lee Tracy, starring as Harry in the proudly we hail production of The Magnificent Parker, will return for the second act in just a moment. But first, here's a special message for Army veterans. Your past experience and know-how are vitally important to the Army today. The vital mission to keep America safe and build its defense forces makes your contribution to its manpower needs doubly important. Yes, there's a great need for you in a great many critical military specialties. So why not help yourself and your country by offering your services now? Take advantage of the chance to brush up on your own special skill and learn the most modern techniques at top Army schools at a time when you're needed most. Your nearest Army and Air Force recruiting station will give you all the information. So, veterans, stop in today and say, I want to rejoin the United States Army. You are listening to Proudly We Hail. And now, with your star, Lee Tracy, we present the second act of The Magnificent Parker.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll tell you something about people, Al. The smarter they get, the dumber they get. Now, you take this guy Bolton. Here's an intelligent man with every benefit that culture, education, and experience can give him. Going for this mentalist business, hook, line, and sinker. This guy really believed I possessed strange and wonderful powers. Anyway, I found myself on that airplane heading for New York, listening wide-eyed to this guy's pitch.
I'll give you the picture briefly. Gerald Reisling, the multimillionaire, was killed in an automobile accident some years ago. He had made a bad marriage and was legally separated soon after his daughter Cynthia was born. He was granted custody of the child, and upon his death, it was discovered that he had left his entire estate, valued at some $7 million, to Cynthia in a trust fund. Having been Gerald's friend of long standing, I was appointed executor of the estate and guardian of the child. At Gerald's death, Cynthia was approximately 2 years of age. Immediately after the funeral, Cynthia Reisling was kidnapped from her crib.
Kidnapped?
Yes, and Mildred vanished too at the same time. Now, there's never been any doubt in my mind, or the police for that matter, that Mildred had kidnapped her daughter. No expense was spared trying to trace them down, but they were never found.
And?
And at last it has paid off. To a degree.
You mean you've located them?
Not them, Mr. Parker. Her. We've located Mildred.
But, well, where's the child?
I don't know. Yes. That is where you come in.
Me?
Yes. Detectives have traced Mildred to a charity ward of a New York hospital. She's dying. She can neither speak nor hear.
And you expect me to...
Exactly, Mr. Parker. There is no doubt that she knows where the child is. You will read her mind and secure the address.
I won't be able to see her immediately.
Why not?
Well, I'm not attuned to this latitude. I'll need a few hours of complete solitude away from the subject to get myself mentally acclimated.
Very well, Parker. I'll drop you off at my hotel.
Well, I don't suppose I could have a little advance.
Certainly. Here's $1,000.
I pocketed the grand gratefully. I needed that dough to buy a few things. When we got to the hotel, Bolton accompanied me to the desk clerk and gave him authority to let me use his key. He left then for the hospital and told me he'd send the rolls back in 2 hours. I hurried up to his apartment. It was a gorgeous duplex layout. I quickly got on the phone, had him send up a bellhop.
Nobody's at the door. Come on in. Old-fashioned bellhop.
It's the bellhop. Yeah. Wonder where that name bellhop came from. Ah, when they would ring the bell at the front desk, they would hop up to the desk, probably.
That's right.
I just thought of that.
I mean, wow.
Exactly. Hop to it right now.
I thought it would be much more complicated than that.
Well, the little bunny suits are probably embarrassing, but...
Fortunately, they've gone by the wayside, more or less.
Ah.
More or less. Yeah.
I don't know for what hotel charges nowadays, but the very least they could do is give you a bit of a jocularity in seeing staff dressed as a bunny. But, oh well.
They should, though. They should absolutely do it.
You know, yeah, yeah. Interesting tale about a mentalist who isn't a mentalist. But he is Amazing Parker? What is that? What he is? What? A Magnificent Parker. Oh, excuse me. He is magnificent, though, you know.
Yes, indeed. And this tale was from the 1950s or 40s?
This one is 1950.
This particular episode. Yeah.
Exactly. And he mentions that he got their start in vaudeville. Now, even in the 1950s, people were starting to forget what the heck vaudeville was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vaudeville, what? Kind of, what? It died out when we came back from the, because it was still going in the 20s.
Yeah, I think the only thing that really survived from that era is burlesque.
That's it. That's the one I'm thinking of. Vaudeville morphed. It just morphed from where you had vaudeville and morphed into burlesque, which was not that dissimilar from vaudeville. But
you're right.
A lot of the performers couldn't find a niche in it anymore.
Yeah.
Well, again, radio was already there and going full blast, and it wasn't long. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, go ahead, CW.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah. And, you know, radio came, and radio killed the vaudeville star.
Very well said.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the burlesque kind of got eaten up into nightclub acts. Burlesque was a bigger stage. Nightclub was a more intimate setting. And because nightclubs, by the time they got to it, really, that's what, when you had people like Lewis and Dean Martin, Martin and Lewis, they really came more out of the nightclubs than they did really out of burlesque.
Yeah, those two did.
As it continued to morph from the big vaudeville circuit down to a smaller burlesque circuit, but still up on a stage in a large place where there's held a lot of people, down to the nightclub, which is more intimate. And there were other people. Danny Thomas came out of the nightclubs, and Gary Moore ended up coming out of the nightclubs.
Yeah, Gary Moore.
The Ames Brothers. Yeah.
But the mentalist went from vaudeville. Some of them made their way into burlesque and sort of that, and then they went into the nightclub, the supper club.
Yeah.
And I don't know, how do you do a mentalist? Well, I suppose you could do mentalist on the radio. You have live audiences in the radio back then.
You could.
The answer man was kind of considered sort of a mentalist. There was a doctor or somebody other who kind of, they'd say, hey, I have a lady up in the balcony. And he'd say, well, you know, lucky you anyway. But, you know, he described something and they would give it. I mean, that was on the radio. I forget
lucky
exactly
you.
Who it was, but. Sorry.
I like it. That's funny.
But
that was a good one.
So anyway, there were a couple type things that were on the radio like that. I don't think it even really worked except as a scripting device like here on television. That's the kind of a thing that you that's more effective in person. So a nightclub, a supper club, that kind of a thing is where something like that is still effective.
Yep. And we've got one more part of Proudly We Hail. Let's wrap it up. We'll have a little bit of time to chat at the end. And, of course, some shameless self-promotion. Onward with the magnificent Parker from Proudly We Hail.
I quickly got on the phone, had him send up a bellhop.
You sent for me, sir?
Yeah. Here's $100. Now take this pencil and paper and write down what I say. I want you to get me a surgical gown and cap, a stethoscope, a pad of 4x5 paper, and a crayon pencil. You got it? The boy was back in less than an hour, and I spent the rest of the time concealing the equipment on my body. When I finally put on my coat, stepped out of the hotel and into the Rolls, I felt a bit heavier, but not enough to be noticed. We sped to the hospital. When we got there, I found Bolton in the lobby.
Well, Parker, are you ready?
One moment. I must be with this woman alone. Only alone can I explore the innermost regions of her subconscious and conscious.
Only hurry. There's not much time. She's very low.
A nurse took me to Mildred's room and left me at the door. I closed the door quietly and removed my coat. Silently, I put on the surgical gown and cap and hung the stethoscope around my neck. I saw an aged, lined, weary face with eyes staring miserably at nothing. Mildred looked about 20 years older than she actually was. And seeing her there, somehow I was reminded of Dory. I approached her tenderly and took her wrist in my hand, felt for her pulse. Then I took out the pad of paper and with the crayon pencil wrote in bold letters, "Can you hear me? Blink your eyes once for yes and twice for no." I held the message in front of her eyes and she blinked twice. No. So far, so good. I'd read this eye communication business in some book and figured maybe it'd work okay. I didn't quite know how to phrase the next question. It was the payoff. So I threw caution to the winds and wrote, "Are you worried about your daughter?" Her eyes opened wide. She stared at me with such intensity that I felt naked and ashamed. And then she blinked her eyes twice. No. My next message read, "Don't worry, Mildred. Cynthia is in heaven now." And through the tears, her eyes became tranquil with peace and happiness as she blinked once. Yes. So, the child was dead. The child was dead, and I was the only one who knew that. Cynthia was dead, and for the first time, a picture presented itself before my eyes. A picture of a little girl about the same age as Cynthia would be coming into $7 million. My little girl. It sounded too easy to work, but somehow I knew it had worked. I knew it could be done. The biggest gypsy switch in carnival history. A present from me to my daughter to make up for all that I'd ever done to her. As I sat there thinking, I turned suddenly to Mildred and saw that her eyes were closed. I felt her hand. She was dead. Hurriedly, I ducked my equipment behind the radiator and left the room.
Were you successful? Could you get to her before she died?
At first, there was a field with mountains in the distance, and then I saw a house, a large house, a mansion, with many children playing near a brook that ran alongside the mansion. And there were the attendants playing with the children, and I realized that this was an orphan's home.
That's it. She's in an orphan's home.
And then I saw a woman standing behind a large oak tree, hidden there and gazing at the children. But at one in particular. The woman was Mildred, a younger Mildred. And the child she singled out was a beautiful, dark-haired, blue-eyed girl called Catherine.
Dark hair, blue eyes. Catherine, that seems to check. But where is this orphan's home?
Wait. Many years ago, Mildred had placed the child there anonymously. The child grew up never knowing her father or her mother.
Yes, yes, but where is this place?
I saw a bus passing the highway that skirts the mansion, and its sign carried a legend. It said, Utica. New York.
An orphan's home near Utica. I'll find it. I'll find it. And I'll find my Catherine.
Did he find her? Did she get the $7 million?
Yep. Bolton found her. He simply claimed Catherine and left with her immediately on an extended cruise to South America.
Oh, what are you so depressed about? He gave you the $20,000, didn't he? You fixed up your child for life, so why the skid?
Yeah, I sure fixed her up. But good. You haven't heard the ending yet. Everything was swell. The switch had worked perfectly. I was all set again. I was figuring out ways to invest my capital and... all of a sudden, 2 months later, my world dropped right out from under me. It was on page 3 of the Times, a small article that all the people had probably passed right by. It told of a storm in the Caribbean and a ship in distress. The ship had weathered the storm and had made port safely with the loss of only one passenger. A little girl named Cynthia Risling. My Catherine. Took me about 3 days to get over the shock. I headed straight for police headquarters, and I got to speak to the chief inspector himself.
Your story is incredible, Parker.
But I tell you, he killed her. He killed her for the money. Adds up from every angle. Check on the will. See if the money doesn't go to him on her death. Can't you see he was desperate? He took her without checking facts. Since when does a person give another person $7 million without checking facts?
No, I'm sorry. Bring me some proof.
Proof, the man says. Okay, I'll give you proof. I'll hand you his rotten carcass on a silver platter.
That's a tough break. Did you ever get anything on him?
No. Was my 20 grand against his millions. I used up the dough in no time hiring detectives and lawyers, but it was no good. And that, sir, is the sordid story of my life.
Wow.
And now, if you'll excuse me, I must be going. It's been a pleasure, pal.
Hey, wait a minute. Here's a little something you might find some use for.
What? A fin. Bless you, Al.
You want anything more? No. That's Guy Parker. Him? One down.
I thought I had it bad, but after listening to his story, by comparison, I'm rolling in clover.
What story was that, Mac? The one about how he got caught by headhunters in the lower Zambezi and spent 10 years taking them in the shell game with shrunken skulls?
Nothing like that, buddy.
Oh, it must have been one of the tearjerkers then. Maybe the one about the mentalist act with his wife and how she died and left the kid who got picked up with some crackpot.
Hey, wait a minute. Hold on. You mean it wasn't true?
Oh, true. You kidding? He's lived around here all his life. For your information, friend, you've been spending the time of day and your dough on Harry the Talker, the smoothest shovel artist this side of the Mississippi.
Well, I'll be...
Lee, you make quite a magnificent Parker.
Well, Ken, with all of his shenanigans, Parker was quite a boy. I really enjoyed playing the role.
Thank you again, Lee, for a wonderful performance. Mr. Tracy will be back to tell you about next week's show in just a moment. But first, I have a few short words to say to the young men and women of America, both to veterans and to those without any military service. You can learn new skills and get the best in technical training while you wear the uniform of the United States Army. There are real openings for ex-servicemen and women, as well as for all the young citizens of this nation. You can help both your country and yourselves. Many of your friends have probably enlisted already, so why not join their ranks in one of the finest of all professions, that of the American soldier? You can get all the information at your nearest Army and Air Force recruiting station. Join the Army today. Volunteer for an Army career. This has been another program on Proudly We Hail, presented in cooperation with this station by your Army and your Air Force. Proudly We Hail stars Lee Tracy. Supporting Mr. Tracy in the cast were Joe DeSantis, George Clark, Joe Ripley, Jack Jason, and Helen Christian. The Magnificent Parker was written by Frank DiFelita. The music was composed and conducted by John Guarneri. Proudly We Hail is directed by Charles Wilkes. This is Kenneth Banghart speaking, and here again is your host and star, Lee Tracy.
We hope you'll be with us next week for another Proudly We Hail presentation. We have a program entitled, This Could Be Murder, and it's an out-of-the-ordinary suspense story. Goodbye.
I thought a show that would be, I would think a show sponsored by the Air Force and the Army would be a lot more violent than that, you know?
Yeah, it should have been. It's kind of disappointing.
Yeah. I was looking for, you know, bombardier sort of stuff. Where's that?
Yeah, I'm telling you.
No kidding.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
now,
we're putting our thumb out next weekend.
Oh.
Yep. A little bit of hitch in there. Doing a little bit of hitch in there.
Yep. Hitchhiking throughout the weekend. Gregory Hood, Quiet Please, and Bosky Blackie on Friday. And for Saturday, Inner Sanctum Mysteries and Crisis. So we're going to be thumbing it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. The thumb. Well before rideshare. The thumb, the original rideshare.
Yeah.
Any favorite ESP movies, guys? Either of you can recall or...
The Eyes of Laura Marr with Faye Dunaway?
All right. No reason to dispute it.
I owe an apology to, I forgot the name of the person who called in when we had the little tete-a-tete about Raymond Burr being in Godzilla. She was quite correct. They did sort of cut and paste Raymond Burr in both the completely Japanese language Godzilla and the other Americanized Godzilla.
Yep.
Oh, so he was in the Japanese version as well then, after all.
Yes, he is in the Japanese version. They just sort of cut and paste in there, kind of, sort of. So she was quite correct. So I tip my hat to, as much as it hurts, I was not correct. Not that I was wrong, but I was not correct.
Well, you weren't fully correct. You were correct, but you're not fully correct. How's that? Is that a little easier?
Yes, that's a better panacea to swallow. Thank you. Thank you.
Anytime. I'm good at making up excuses for myself. Might as well make up a few for others.
Oh, thank you very much.
I can't think of any movies, but I know there's TV shows like one of the episodes where Boris Karloff was in the Thriller, where he was a mentalist himself and foresaw things. I think it's an interesting premise when it isn't just a hoax. I think it's an interesting premise for a show.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. That's music.
Familiar. Suspenseful music.
Well,
was that Godzilla?
She mentioned Godzilla. I thought, well, why not?
Oh, yes.
Soothing melody.
Speaking of Godzilla, which has nothing to do with Godzilla, coming up at 10 o'clock tonight on WeirdDarkness.com, and is the weirdo... the Weirdo Watch Party. It's a W-E-I-R-D darkness.com. And down the second line is a link right to the Weirdo Watch Party for our premiere of our latest show, the Magic Sword.
With Vampyra.
And Vampyra? With Basil Rathbone. Vampires in there?
Yes. We talked about
Okay.
This.
Yeah, we did.
Cool.
Yeah, she is the hag, I think. The old...
Oh, she's the hag in there.
I think she's the, the evil sorceress lady. Under her real name.
Oh, the evil sorceress. Okay.
Myla Nurmi, I believe. Yep.
What
so we'll
that?
Be back
was
Friday
she
at 6:30.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
That's if we can hitch a ride to the Erie House.
Get here however you can. If you have to stick your thumb out, hey, we got five tails for you next weekend. Starting Friday at 5:30 Eastern. We're out of here.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, let's dig it. Let's dig it. Let's all dig it.
Perfect. Almost perfect. Almost perfect. Not bad. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Darn, this Wi-Fi's been going in and out, left and right.
I can
My
tell.
Goodness.
Sometimes your microphone is pinging a little bit. Like it gets pinging.
Well, it sounded really good tonight, other than the one time we lost you. And there's one time for a short amount of time you got a little digital on us. Other than that, it was really good tonight.
Yep.
Oh. Excellent.
Not too bad.
Oh, yes, you can do amazing things with a coat hanger nowadays.
Yep.
A coat hanger and duct tape.
Coat hanger,
yeah,
duct tape, what do you...
Exactly. Of course, I may have been crossing the streams between McDonald's, Pizza Hut, and Chick-fil-A. I don't know.
No wonder I was getting hungry.
Oh.
Yeah.
I haven't had Chick-fil-A in a while. That sounds good.
I don't know what they're putting in their food, but there are so many cars just in their drive-thru. I mean, what the hula hoop is in that food?
I don't know.
I mean, it's a good quality. It's a good quality sandwich, but I don't know that it deserves all the hoopla it gets. But okay. You know, they get people double lined up through there, and they move them, so we'll probably move them.
McDonald's used to have a good breakfast chicken sandwich. It was real crispy. It was good. And small, you know, nothing real big, something light for breakfast. It was good.
Yeah. Of course, everyone, they got, I think so, and now you have Popeyes vying for that spot that Chick-fil-A had. I think KFC is... Yeah, chicken sandwich. Hold the spinach.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I don't see that they can ever really vie for them because of the neighborhood differences that they go up in. I know around Akron here, the Popeyes are in least desirable neighborhoods. So.
Yeah, it's kind of like that in Ohio. Yeah,
and Chick-fil-A, they're in much more favored status neighborhoods. Shall we say.
Oh,
more your upscale suburbs and stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
Aren't we part of the? Oh, Chick-fil-A, trying to kowtow to the 1%, are we? Don't we have our noses in the air, Chick-fil-A?
No.
Well.
Maybe I think they're just avoiding crime.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I think the very least they can do is boost their Wi-Fi, you cheapskate.
There you go. That's right. You got to keep
the
W.
Do you have an enhancer that picks up local Wi-Fi, CW, out of curiosity?
As a matter of fact... yes, not that I'm naming names, but I've had excellent luck with Netgear. And I'm going to get a device where I can plug that into yonder vehicle to be a pickup mobile, not in the pickup mobile that you're thinking of, but a pickup mobile to enhance it, and then boost it.
Ah.
Okay.
I have a Netgear router. I have a Netgear router.
Oh. Hello.
You there? I can hear you. Maybe
there it goes. Hang on.
Huh?
I'm back.
She's back.
Sit. Still here.
There you are. Yes.
Ah, there it is. It's stabilized again. Lousy Chick-fil-A getting in the way of Pizza Hut.
Hey. Pizza Hut has better Wi-Fi, huh? All right, good.
Yeah, they do, actually. But occasionally
something. I don't know. Perhaps it's the fryer they have over at Chick-fil-A. Once they put it in the fryer, it screws up things, boosts their signal, and then when they take things out of the fryer, then I get Pizza Hut again.
We have two grocery stores in our little town, and one of them makes their own, you know, they deep fry their own chicken, and it's pretty good. It's not bad. It's called like Charlie's or something.
Hmm.
But not bad.
Charlie's chicken?
Yeah.
Charlie's chicken, yeah.
Their
I don't know if I
could
eat
good.
A Charlie's chicken. I don't know.
Oh, no. It's good. The batter's good. It's not bad. It's just so like crispy. And then they have some naked.
But yes.
Without the batter.
Huh. Well, not that I eat chicken, but what's the point without the batter?
Agreed.
If you season them right and you crisp up, if you crisp up the skin right and you season them right, oh, it's really good like that. Bake it. It's really good. Oh, like take a chicken breast, even the kind with the bones in it. You just pop it in the like a roasting pan and bake it. Oh yeah, good stuff.
Mhm. Mm.
Chicken.
Very nice. So, correct. Dave was correct. I will be, I already have invested in a booster.
Yep. On again.
Yep.
So,
There you are.
Got unboosted.
Yeah, they dropped some more chicken in the fryer.
The network.
Yep.
Next, I want to learn how to drop more
chicken in the fryer. So
yes, for heaven's sake.
I would like to learn how to make bloomin' onions. Bloomin' onions would be good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Go on YouTube.
Yeah, there's a bunch of how-tos. Yep. I think how-to even the cowboy.
YouTube.
Cowboy Kent does them. That's my boy, Cowboy Kent Rollins. He's on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
He's a character. It reminds me of the kind of character cooks like Martin Yan and Justin Wilson and those kind of guys. They were fun. You would have liked Martin Yan, CW.
Well, guys,
he made a lot of vegetarian dishes.
He does. I was quite surprised. You know, he made some dishes that even moi could partake of.
Yep. I like a good vegetable stir fry. Oh, yeah. Just rice and veggies.
There you go.
Most definitely.
Maybe a little olive
oil.
And
the corn. He did the corn dodgers. He did the recipe for the corn dodgers. Those things that the trail herders had where you could bounce them off a bullet.
Who did you see make the corn dodgers?
Cowboy Kent.
Yes, I saw that one. I saw that episode. What's his name? John Wayne referenced them in True Grit.
True Grit.
Yep.
Yes.
Corn Dodgers.
I guess you took them out. Well, and that's perfect for Cowboy Kent because he does the cattle drives and stuff he cooks for. So. Why not make some corn dodgers that'll last them on the road?
Yeah. Ah, yes, your cowpoke of today has changed since then. You're still on your horse. You still have your Stetson, but now you're wondering, well, what in the Sam Hill's wrong with this Wi-Fi? My horse can't pick up the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I wonder if they do get satellite phones and stuff like that for the trail rides, if they've modernized it all in that regard, and GPS and all
rides?
That stuff. Yeah, they
still
got to
run
cattle. Yeah, they still got to do. They still got to herd cattle.
Okay.
Oh yeah, they herd cattle. Usually, they don't do it by helicopter.
I just thought they'd have their beef on the hoof traveling better these days. You know.
Yeah.
Well, they still have to get it off the range. if you have free range, especially if you have free range cattle, which a lot of people prefer, versus cattle that's been kept in disgusting conditions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, yeah, that, and it should be as humane as possible. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't want tortured cow.
Yeah. For example, what's his face? The guy? I know. Poor thing.
Pee-wee.
The guy who has Goldshaw Farm in Vermont. Have you ever watched?
No.
Oh, yeah. Pee-wee Herman passed away.
Yes, he did. Paul Rubens is,
yes, he did.
Is
yeah.
No longer. Yep. Somebody painted that giant dinosaur from the first movie with you know, like the big white high top tennis shoes and wearing a bow tie. That's a nice homage. Troubled fella.
Playhouse.
But funny.
The king of...
Troubled fella, but funny as hell.
Yeah, he had his demons, but... Oh, well, he could make you laugh.
That he could.
Yes.
I remember him.
He had his troubles.
Do you remember him as the hamburger dude?
The hamburger dude.
Hamburger dude. I think it was
the hamburger?
Teacher. Yeah. Hamburger. This is just as he was developing that character, Pee-wee. And it was a Cheech and Chong movie, and I think it was a reference to cocaine. Hamburger.
Oh, okay.
As I recall. He kept saying, hamburger, and then pointing under the table, and they all went under there and snorted cocaine or something. I don't know. Cheech and Chong, you know?
Yeah,
that was one of his very, very, very early appearances. I think that he was credited as Paul Rubens before he let that role kind of absorb him.
Gentlemen, the Wi-Fi is starting to really fade, so...
Yeah, we probably ought to get it. If you come back long enough, you can bring in the great one.
Yes. Mr. Durante, before I lose the Wi-Fi... Please rush to the stage, Mr. Durante. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Good night.
Good
night. I gotta build a fireplace.
Good night. What more to say but good night?
Good night, Mr. Pickle.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Night, Mrs. Calabash. Ooh, the double.